Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. My guest today is almost an EU institution in his own right. For 10 years, Philip Lambert has co-chaired the group of the Greens here in the European Parliament, and he's been an MEP for Belgium in three legislatures since 2009. His passion for green issues spans more than 30 years and will no doubt continue once he leaves this Parliament in the next few months. A prolific commentator on European affairs, he recently accused EU policymakers of sleepwalking towards economic and environmental suicide. Philip Lambert, welcome to the programme.
A pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Let's talk about the opinion polls for the Greens across the EU. You're projected to have quite a big drop in the number of seats in this election, and yet at the same time, climate change is such a huge issue. Why is that paradox?
Well, there may be several reasons, but first, the game is not over until the end time has been whistled. So,
till June the 9th.
Well, you know, most voters decide very late in their thinking process. Some of them decide in the last days, the last hours, the last minutes before voting. So, well, we have to keep fighting. But what may the reasons be? I do believe that people are not stupid, and they know that, well, what the Greens propose is a quite substantial change, especially in our economic model. And change is, well, making people afraid. I think that an aversion to change that I understand, but we can't afford not to change. That's one aspect. Second, to be honest, and, well, I don't want to blame others, but we have been basically the scapegoat of everything that goes wrong. Best example was the farmers' revolt, where actually their revolt was caused by an economic model that is crushing them, but it was all the fault of the Greens. And that came, of course, from the right wing, but it was echoed by many media saying, yeah, it's the European Green Deal. Well, the European Green Deal has yet to reach the countryside. I mean, in no legislative text did we really touch agriculture with the European Green Deal. But that kind of fallacy is, of course, easy to use in a, well, I would say, a post-truth world, and we see a lot of that. But then again, we can blame the context, we can blame the competition, but our first responsibility is to be good and to deliver our best game ever. And I would say we have 6 weeks to demonstrate that indeed we are both a credible and a desirable choice. So up to us.
On the farming question, I did recently talk to young farmers, and they were very pleased that some of the environmental obligations on them under the Common Agricultural Policy were being removed, the so-called GAEC. They're actually feeling that the removal of obligations is a good thing for them.
Well, of course, when basically you can barely make any profit from your basic activity, any constraint that disappears gives you a little breathing space, but that doesn't fix the problem, frankly. The fact is that farmers, especially family farmers, see their buying prices imposed by their suppliers and their selling prices imposed by their buyers, their customers. That means that they have almost zero margin, and this is not fixed by these the removal of the few green constraints of the Common Agricultural Policy. So that won't be a solution as long as the European Union continues favoring industrial farming and export-oriented farming. And that is still the reality today. You know that 80% of the CAP money is going to 20% of the farms. I mean, that in itself tells you that something is deeply wrong.
Let's go back to the polls we mentioned at the beginning. We've seen not just a slump in the projections for the Green vote, and I know you're saying it's not over till it's over. We've also seen a rise in, let's say, sovereignist or Eurosceptic political forces. How do you expect to position yourself in the next parliament? What's your gut feeling? Do you think you'll be with the opposition or part of a majority?
Well, I would say that we have a certain sense of gravity of the situation the European Union finds itself in. And that sense of responsibility calls us to really look at options that would make a stable pro-European majority in the European Parliament. Well, the presence of the Greens in the European Council is limited. In the Parliament, maybe we can indeed weigh enough, and that's my key point to European voters. If you want the Green Deal to carry on, you have to strengthen the Greens. And indeed, as you said earlier, many Europeans still put climate and the environment very in their top three preoccupations. So indeed, there's a point to be made. And there, of course, our condition to support a majority in the European Parliament will be not just defending the acquis of the European Green Deal. First, we have to make everything that has been adopted work. And for that, you need investment, not just regulation. And second, there's many areas that have been left alone by the Green Deal, starting with agriculture, as I said earlier. So what we will want is a deepening and a widening of the European Green Deal. But on that condition, we would be ready to support a pro-European majority in the European Parliament. And absolutely, if the alternative is a majority that is supported by the far right, as a Democrat, I do not have the slightest hesitation that the Greens need to be there when they are needed.
How do you rate the Green legacy of this five-year legislature? Because we've seen quite a lot of measures pass in the last couple of months and just in the last few days on, you know, the reuse of recycling, on air quality and so forth. Is it a good record?
Well, compared with my first two terms in the Parliament, it's day and night. I mean, you know, when Jean-Claude Juncker, von der Leyen's predecessor, left, he gave a speech here in Strasbourg where he spoke for 25 minutes about his legacy as a president of the European Commission. Can you imagine that the word climate did not came up once? The word environment, not once. And remember, the Paris Climate Conference took place under his watch. Not worth a mention. And here, lo and behold, you have a Commission president that launches the Green Deal, which arguably is not, well, has shortcomings, obviously, but no one can claim that nothing was done, right? And indeed, it's really remarkable that the European Green Deal was launched and majorities were found up until the last plenary to adopt a number of these texts. But we see that they are fragile. They are fragile. And this is where European voters need to make a decision. Do they want to continue on that path and indeed make sure that we are not doing anything stupid economically or socially? Absolutely, there's no doubt about that. But is it really an option to stop not even halfway? No, of course not. And therefore, my message to them is reinforce us Greens, because that's the only way to guarantee the outcome of the Green Deal. And if I may, we have a proof of what's happening when the Greens are not around the table. 27 heads of states and government, the European Council, they meet, not a Green there, not one, right? Strategic agenda, the European Green Deal is not even mentioned. So without Greens, forget it.
You mentioned earlier the investment that will be needed to make these changes in society and changes in the economy. And you've said that it's, I'm slightly paraphrasing what you said, but that it's naive for European leaders to believe that this will come from private investment, because private investment has to be profitable, otherwise private companies are not going to invest.
Quite obviously.
But why do EU leaders keep saying private
because
investment?
They don't want to face up their own contradictions. That is the problem. They've been preaching for decades this neoliberal ideology that actually the state is a factor of inefficiency in the market. So the smaller the state, the better it is. Well, the fact is that every serious study, every serious economist is telling you, without a very strong public investment, the Green Deal will not happen. And even in areas where you might think, well, it has to be private, you know. Let's talk about building renovation. Most buildings are privately owned, so you might say that's for private investment to fund it. Yeah, but that's a bit too easy. Actually, most homeowners do not have spare capital available to pay for refurbishment of their houses, which means that actually, if you really want the renovation wave for a category of households, without public investment, it won't happen. I can afford to renovate my home, but many can't. And if they can't, you need public support. Likewise, in basic industries, steel companies. I mean, because of our mercantilist economic policy, actually, we have been accepting basic industrial products like steel and cement from outside of the European Union. I talked recently with the boss of a major European steel company. What they are telling me is that we are burning cash. We are burning cash at a fast rate, so we are making losses. In other terms, we want to go for the transition. We want to replace blast furnaces by direct reduction ovens using green hydrogen. But the unit cost of that at the moment, as we are building the prototypes, is 2 billion apiece. I mean, we don't have the money, so without public support, won't happen. So when Draghi says that most of the investment has to come from the private sector, yes, in theory, Mario, but in practice, no, it's less simple than that.
One other area I wanted to touch on, you and I talked a lot about the Qatar Gate scandal when it broke, this alleged influence buying by Qatar here in the European Parliament. We now have the so-called Russia Gate affair and even alleged Chinese influence buying. We don't have time to get into details, but do you think, what's the legacy going to be of this Parliament in terms of the integrity of its members and how transparent their activities have been to the general public?
Well, there's still room for improvement, I would say. If we had our way, we would have an external ethics body that would really have teeth. We won't have that. We will have a sort of advisory body. But I would say that most of what has been happening is already illegal. I mean, the suitcases of money of Qatar were illegal, right? So you don't need new laws to make something illegal more illegal, right? Same thing, spying is illegal. So this is about intelligence services doing their part. We are not an intelligence service. We are a legislating body. And the public security service is doing their work. So yes, we need to step up the efforts because it is obvious that the interest of autocracies around the world is to weaken the European Union. And indeed, they will use national populists as conduits to do that. Of course, because nationalists are in to break the European unity. So, of course, they are objective allies of Putin, of Xi Jinping and others.
We'll have to end it there. We've run out of time. But thank you so much for being my guest, Philippe Lamberts, head of the Greens in the European Parliament for 10 years, but now stepping down from that role. You've been watching Talking Europe.